This is Declan Spring. Welcome to the podcast.
Let's talk with Declan Spring.
Today I'm doing another cross-branded episode. So as you may or may not know, I host our local Association of Realtors, the Bridge Association of Realtors podcast. It's a shorter format and it's often a weekly podcast, but occasionally I have guests on there, and I think the conversation is also relevant to my interests and the kind of things that I like to have on my own podcast. So with gratitude to Bridge Association of Realtors, I bring you the most recent episode of Bridge Association of Realtors podcast, a conversation with Cameron Platt. Now, we did record this on Zoom, so it's not the most ideal audio, but I think it works. Bear with it. There's some good content here. And also the music after this initial intro, the music is going to be different than you regularly hear on this podcast. Okay, without further ado. Welcome to the Bridge Association of Realtors podcast, where we spotlight Bay Area Realtor members and affiliates and share information about how the association can better serve our members. I'm your host, Declan Spring. Today I'm chatting with Cameron Platt. Cameron Platt is a broker and the co-founder of Abio Properties. Cameron's career in real estate was born out of a dissatisfaction with the practice of law. He realized he had a stronger passion for helping people in real estate transactions than in court, and he considers himself a recovering attorney. In our conversation, Cameron and I discuss the value and protection that realtors bring to consumers and the pressing need for realtors to understand and articulate their value to consumers in the face of downward pressure on commissions from various places, including new tech, private enterprise, and lawsuits. We reference the Code of Ethics and Standards of Practice of the National Association of Realtors as a key document that each realtor should carefully review and consider in dealing with consumers. There's a link to that document in the podcast notes. You might want to print it up and take a look at it. And now I bring you Cameron Platt. I couldn't be more pleased to have you on the podcast, Cameron. You and I don't know each other that well, but I only hear great things spoken about you, and you've been deeply involved with the Association of Realtors for years. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for the kind words.
And you're a broker and owner of Abio Properties. Can you give us a little history, your history as a realtor, how you got into the industry, and then tell us about your own brokerage, and
sure.
And then we can move to Association of Realtor topics.
Sure. So I started my real estate career as a broker. I was a practicing attorney, and now I call myself a recovering attorney. Ha ha. But I got into real estate. I got my license simply to collect referral fees. I was at my own practice and was giving away a bunch of business. And upon recommendation of a family member, I took the broker's test, got my broker's license, and just kind of went about my way practicing law. And I had a family friend who was trying to buy a condo. And I said, hey, let me try to represent you here if you don't have an agent. And so he let me do it. And I was hooked from then on. I said, this beats the heck out of, you know, billing time and practicing law. So I was hooked. And I just very, very quickly wound down my law practice and started just being a full-time realtor and broker. And that was 2004. By 2008, I think I was doing, 95% of my time and income was spent on real estate. And I was doing a little bit of like wills and trusts work in law. But for the most part, I had been practicing real estate and starting out my own small brokerage. It was just me and an assistant at that point. And then I added a couple of agents. When my wife and I had our first child in 2011, I convinced her to come work with me, not for me. It was a very important distinction. And she ended up getting her license and practices with me now. And we have a four-person team and 40 wow. ish agents with my business partner, Lynette. We started Abio Properties in 2016, I want to say.
Right.
It's all fading into, it's all blurry now, but yeah, we've been in business for 7-ish years, and sort of with the, I mean, this is a great, tie-in with our code of ethics. Abio is short for, it's a bastardization of the Spanish word for open, abierto.
Oh, okay. And
what we wanted to do was build a brokerage where it was very, very flat, very open, very transparent, where it was really functioning as a large team and everybody could help each other and be collaborative. And for the most part, it's worked.
And I visited the Abio office on, I guess, Telegraph.
Broadway, yeah.
I was a little jealous, I'm going to say, just a little bit, because it was like a cross between a regular office and like the cast of Friends might show up any second.
it's sort of luxe. You know, we wanted to build a space that was usable for social events and for our agents to sponsor events, have client appreciation parties, that sort of thing. And so we do have this large warehousey space formed before WeWork imploded. So we sort of had that vibe. And it's, we've had some success in, but really it's kind of a fun party space. We've got a full kitchen and a pool table and all the things that I thought were important at the time.
Including a shower, which I thought was quite unique.
which apparently has even been used.
Well, you know, it can be a dirty job getting in under houses sometimes. So I would use it if I was there. So listen, and you're involved with the Association of Realtors, not just Bridge, but predating, you know, Oakland, Berkeley coming together as an association. You were president of the Oakland Association of Realtors, right?
Correct. Back in 2012, that was sort of my entree into volunteer leadership. And from there, I went to the California Association of Realtors and got very heavily involved there, sort of trying to chase my own personal strengths in, you know, with my legal background. So I've chaired the forms committee. I'm currently on the strategic planning and finance committee. I've been on the legal action fund trustees committee. It's not really a committee, a legal action fund, where we try to funnel money to legal causes that deserve them to protect private property rights. And I do a similar thing with the National Association of Realtors, but to a lesser degree.
Which is why I felt like you were exactly the right person for me to talk to today, because the thing, as you know, the thing I wanted to talk to you about, it's been coming up recently for me when I'm interviewing other podcast guests and just when I'm chatting with colleagues out in the field, is the threat to the career, right? We have these various DOJ lawsuits that are threatening our careers. We always have the constant pressure of private enterprise. We have ChatGPT. You know, there are things that seem to signal to us that as realtors, we really need to understand our values. We really need to be able to let the buying public and selling public out there understand just how essential we are and what they'd be missing if they don't have us anymore. If we get squeezed out of the system, the general public's going to lose. And so trying to find somebody who can really articulate the value of a realtor.
I think it goes back to public perception of the value of our industry, the value of the services that we provide. You know, realtors get a pretty bad rap. You know, regularly, we get compared to, you know, about as favorably as used car salesmen. Mm-hmm. There's a joke that goes around saying, you know, you're a cosmetologist, you know, needs, you know, hundreds of hours of training, and we need a pulse and be a felon and be 18. But we do a terrible job of conveying
articulating our values.
Just a terrible job. And I think that there are a lot of agents out there who are, you know, for part-time agents or agents who do, you know, one deal a year, which is, you know, the median agent does one deal a year. There are many that do zero. It's a very easy license to have and just to hold and sort of park it somewhere. But for the agents who really are working full-time in this industry and providing that value, we still do a terrible job of articulating that value. And so I know this, you wanted to concentrate more on the code of ethics and standards of practice here. And I don't know if this is a good place to sort of introduce it, but You know, if you were to take that code of ethics and say, you know, what is it really conveying? It is for, you know, it's duties to the client and customer. It is, it's an elevated duty of honesty, fair dealing, and good faith. It is, it really is being transparent about how we make our money, what we are supposed to do for our clients, what we will not do. Part of the code of ethics is not poaching clients from other agents, that sort of thing. Realtors provide a service that is paid for through the transaction cost most of the time, through commissions that are established in the MLS that the seller pays for, but really the buyer pays for it because who's bringing the money to the table. And so, you know, this DOJ lawsuit saying that we that the commissions should be separate from the transaction, that buyers should pay commissions, you know, outside of the MLS, or they should pay, they shouldn't be rolled up into the transaction costs. I think we're doing the public a disservice by doing that. Because it's hard to finance that. First of all, lenders won't finance personal services. Mm. And then there's simply, if you make a buyer pay out of pocket, mm-hmm. Remember that the strength of real estate purchases comes in leverage. And so if someone is going to pay, you know, $100,000 in for a house and only put down 20% of that, you know, $20,000, and then they're going to cough up another few percentage points, whatever that is, it's all negotiable. But if they're going to cough that up out of their pocket as well, then there's sort of a feeling of, well, maybe I should just go and let the seller's agent represent me in the deal as well. And what could go wrong? And the answer is a hell of a lot can go wrong. Mm-hmm. Because you have someone who is not necessarily dedicated to your best result. Mm-hmm. And so as a fierce proponent of private property rights and a fierce advocate for my client's interests, you know, we'd have to change the way we do business. And I think a lot of agents would be out of luck. A lot of agents would go out of the business if mm-hmm. they had to articulate their own value and be able to say, hey, I can represent you on this, but it's going to cost you an extra whatever I charge. So you will get, I think, a lot more reduced service sort of models rather than having a full service model like that most realtors provide.
Not sure how many newer realtors or you know, younger realtors think about it, but that distinction between a real estate agent and a realtor is something that consumers are not necessarily aware that there's a difference between being a real estate agent and being a realtor.
And, no, you know, I would agree. I would agree. And most consumers don't even know how to say realtor.
Right.
And two syllables, not three. You know?
A lot of realtors don't know how to say realtor.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Or realty. Passing your licensing exam and establishing that you're a licensed real estate agent, and you can go out and can you subscribe to the MLS if you're not a realtor? I think you can.
Yes, you can. Absolutely. Yes.
So you can work using the platforms that we use, but without the library, and you don't need to subscribe to any, you know, additional code of ethics beyond whatever's in the, you know, the state licensing. I think that we fail often to articulate our this kind of thing to consumers out there. We're trying to prove ourselves and our worth against our colleagues in the industry because we're competing with one another, but we're not giving an overall sense of the value that all of us as an industry or as an association provide.
Right. And I think the code of ethics is so inherently valuable to our profession, to this occupation, but I think we overstate its value or its importance to the consumer on a transaction by transaction basis. Like, we can go on about how ethical we are and how dedicated we are to practicing, elevating the standard of care and practice. And they're like, yeah, yeah, nice. Get me the house.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it was like, I think it was Henry Ford that said, grub first, then ethics. It's like, you got to have the thing that you need before you get to have the luxury of ethics. And I think that's a dangerous way of thinking. But unfortunately, you know, especially in a robust market like the Bay Area has been in forever, it's, yeah. you know, it sort of goes out the window a little bit too quickly.
Yeah. Let's say, you know, if we go through a period of time over the next several years where there's a, you know, a massive downward pressure on commissions and people get out of the business, you know, let's say new tech manages to squeeze us further and squeeze people out of the business. At the end of the day, what do you think that consumer at large is going to regret? They may not know they're going to regret it, but what do you think people would regret if they lose experienced, ethical realtors from the transaction?
I think we won't know how bad it is until it's actually bad, because there are so many things that can go wrong in a real estate transaction. It's not that it is inherently inherently complicated or difficult to do. It's just it's something that most people don't do multiple times every month, you know, right. unless you're a real estate professional, or maybe you're a wholesaler or a house flipper or something like that. And if you're a real estate professional in whatever capacity, then you have the familiarity with the transactions and all of the disclosures and all of, you know, the public policy of all of the consumer protection laws that are in place. I don't think it can be overstated how important those protections are. If you look at our residential purchase agreement that we use in California, the standard RPA, in the 1970s, that was one page. It is now 16 pages. Every single line that's been added to that that agreement is the result of something that's gone wrong, mm-hmm. something that needs to be clarified, mm-hmm. some risk that needs to be averted. And so I think to take that for granted is folly. Mm-hmm. I had a client early on in my career who wanted me to sell their condo at Pleasanton, which is a little bit outside of my area. But I said, okay, you're selling it to your tenant. That's fine. I can handle it. No problem. And the tenant, I kid you not, faxed me. Remember, this is how long ago it is. Faxed me a handwritten one page agreement that said, I want to buy your condo for this much money, and signed it. And thought that would, and then tried to go behind my back. You don't need to use a realtor. You know, we can just do this by ourselves. I'm like looking at this piece of paper that's okay, great. That's one term of many that we need to discuss.
Right.
And just, you know, I think that's a great illustration of not just maybe ignorance, but naivete of the complexity the necessary complexity that a real estate transaction represents.
It's not just that. There's also in an urban area like this, and God knows probably in rural areas too, all of these local ordinances that we have to deal with, not only deal with, but we also want to try and, you know, work with the consumer in mind to make these ordinances as simple, or fight, maybe push back on ordinances. We do an awful lot behind the scenes to protect people's private property rights, and people might not be aware of that. What would you say to anybody who has not been involved with the association locally, and why they might want to reconsider, maybe get involved with the association? What have you benefited from in terms of being involved with the association at a leadership level?
Yeah, no, great question. So in a very selfish way, it has helped my business by expanding my sphere of influence within the professional real estate industry. I ran for our board in 2010 because I was an outsider. I was running my own little one-man brokerage, and nobody knew me, and I was trying to play with the big boys. I'd never interned at a big box realty company or anything like that. And so I felt like I needed to get on the board of realtors to sort of be better known within the community, because it is a very small community. When I ran for the board and was elected to the board first time, yay! my real estate transaction volume went up. I was able to get more deals done because people knew who I was, or at least they were familiar with the name. They knew I wasn't just some schmo with my own shingle out and just, hey, it's Cameron Platt Realty. But I was a known quantity. There was some accountability there. I was, I had a bigger stature in the community, and so there's more accountability.
Yeah, there's a reputational accountability when your name is out there.
Absolutely. And you know, as a single broker owner, now when and this is no slight on broker owners. There's the lifeblood of the real estate community. There's so many of them, but it's interesting when you have someone who is running their own shop and a dispute comes up with one of my agents. I'm like, okay, let me go talk to their broker. Who's the broker? Oh, they are their own broker. Okay, how big is the brokerage? Oh, it's just them. And it's like, oh no, there's no accountability. I can't go up the chain. I can't go, you know, I can't carry it out and speak to their manager, quote unquote. And so it's like, it can be a very difficult and uncomfortable conversation to try to just resolve that dispute. So having some sort of reputation within the real estate community, then there's an accountability, I guess, is the long-winded way of saying that.
Okay, that's a good answer. And so, listen, I like to keep the podcasts fairly short. You've been generous with your time. I give every guest the opportunity to answer this question. If you're listening back to this podcast later today or whenever, tomorrow, what might you regret not having covered along these lines on these topics?
Go get involved in your local real estate board, no matter if it's Bridge or whatever one it is. Go get involved, sit on a committee, find out how the sausage is made. Get involved with, get involved, first of all. The second one is consider investing in the Realtor Action Fund or the Realtor PAC. Realtors are a very large and strong voice for private property rights and our industry. And if you're not helping the organization lobby for those rights, then you can't really complain when those rights are taken away.
Right. That's a great answer as well. I really appreciate your time. I'm going to create a link in the podcast show notes that'll bring people right to the Code of Ethics and Standards of Practice, the effective January 2023. I personally, at some point, decided to print these and I put them in the glove box of my car. And whenever I look over the glove box of my car, I remember that there's a Code of Ethics, Standards of Practice, and if I need to pull it out and read it, sometimes I do. I think it's healthy and smart for people to do it. So
and it can be fun too. If you read through the Code of Ethics, you can have a ton of aha moments where you're like, oh, that shouldn't have happened in that transaction.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, it's quite revelatory actually to have a good sit down, read through the Code of Ethics, Standards of Practice. So I encourage people to do it on their off time, just because we're realtors. Let's understand what that really means. So I really do appreciate your time, Cameron. I wish you terrific success with Abio. Now I know what it means. And your third office launch last week and all of that was a great success. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Can you let everybody know how they can reach you?
You can reach me at my first name at abioproperties.com. That's Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, at abioproperties.com.
Do you want anybody to follow an Instagram account for Abio?
I'm on everywhere I am. I'm Cameron Platt.
Cameron Platt.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you want.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Cameron. That's P-L-A-T-T, two T's, right?
Correct.
Okay, great. I'll let you get on with your busy day. Thanks for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, Declan.
Let's do the credits. I'm your host, Declan Spring. Please reach out to me at 415-446-8591 with comments or suggestions, or you can email me at declan@redoakrealty.com. Thanks to Divine Alara, CEO of Bridge Association of Realtors, and the staff at Bridge Association, and our current Bridge AOR president, Felicia Matters Villa, for making the show possible. Thank you, Chuck Lindo, for the podcast music. chucklindomusic@gmail.com. And Lisa Mazur for our graphics, lisamazurdesign.com. Catch you on the next episode, everybody. And in the meantime, please like the show and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on and share with your industry friends and anybody else who might be interested to know what goes on behind the scenes.